Huey and Tommy stood together on the station platform, hats in their hands, watching two station workers slide the wooden box into the baggage car to begin its long trip back to Skip Harkness's home in East Texas. Something got in Huey's eye, dust blown up from beneath the train, more than likely. Old man Jenkins hunched beside the baggage wagon.
I was a good lad, and he worked for me. He deserves to be treated kindly and with respect. Can't put a value on a good lad.
Can if he's a cowboy. $25 a month. $30 if he's a top hand. $50 if he can drive an automobile.
Jenkins had barely known Skip's name when he was alive, but he was generous now that Skip was dead, paying the cost of sending the youngster home to be buried among his own. He was a rancher of the old tradition, feeling more kinship with the cowboys who worked for him than with the bankers who tended his wealth. Bias Villegas and Aparicio Rodriguez stood beside Huey and Tommy, seeing Skip off. Bias crossed himself as a railroad employee slid the door to the baggage car shut. Aparicio followed suit. The two men were of a different heritage than Skip, but they were kinsmen in their trade and their chosen way of life.
Son, it ain't something you ever get used to, seeing your friends die. But the older you get, the more it'll happen. Till one day you look around and it's you they're saying words over.
He was too young to die, Uncle Huey.
And too reckless to keep himself alive.
Jenkins headed back to the Circle W in his automobile. Bige Saunders and Bias Villegas riding with it. The cowboys who came to see Skip off would return on horseback. Tommy untied his dun, then stood beside it with his head down, making no effort to mount.
Uncle Huey, I don't know if I can go back out there. I'd keep remembering what happened.
You'll remember it no matter where you're at. It's like getting back on a horse after he's throwed you off. Best thing is to go out yonder where it took place and look the devil square in the eye.
But I feel like I caused it. If I hadn't bet with him, he might not have thrown those bulls together.
Tommy, he'd have done it whether you bet with him or not. So stop whipping yourself over the shoulders like some New Mexico penitente. He flirted with Lady Luck once too often.
What Tommy needed was to go home, Huey thought, and remain there where he belonged.
Look, when the roundup is finished, I'll take you back to your folks. But for now, a good cowboy don't quit in the middle of the works and leave his boss shorthanded.
You saying I'm a good cowboy?
I don't know many better except me and Aparicio and Snort Yarnell.
Not until the work was done and most of the crew was preparing to return to the J Bar did Huey tell Jenkins that he was taking Tommy home.
The boy's still grieving about Skip. He's having a tough time staying here where it happened.
Jenkins was disappointed, but he understood.
I've buried a lot of friends and kin. It never gets no easier.
Every time one goes, you're that much closer to being left by yourself.
I've been watching that nephew of yours. He's got the makings. Pretty soon he'll be as good as you were in your prime.
Yeah, I'm still in my prime.
We could argue all day about that, but I ain't got the patience. Thing is, I hate to see y'all quit. You could take the boy home to visit his folks a few days and do me a favor at the same time.
Well, what kind of favor?
You know a man named Frank Gervin?
Huey would not have thought of the first name for $20.
Fat Gervin? In the Upton City Bank? I know him.
Is he dependable?
Well, I guess you could say that. You can always depend on him to do the wrong thing.
Jenkins frowned as he pondered Huey's appraisal.
My Fort Worth banker got me in touch with him. Gervin sold me a string of broncs.
Sight unseen?
If you can't trust a banker, who can you trust? Anyway, Gervin says they come from the ranch of a man named Laudermilk.
Alvin Laudermilk. Well, he raises good stock.
So Bodge tells me. You and the boy could take a short vacation, then bring me the horses.
Well, I can't promise you about Tommy. He's liable to stay home.
At least Huey hoped he would.
But I'll bring you your broncs.
They camped a night beside Fort Stockton's Comanche Springs, where cool, sweet water gushed from the ground in a volume that always amazed Huey. Water was in such short supply across most of West Texas that nature seemed overly extravagant here. They could have used the likes of this around Upton City. There, everybody had to dig or drill for water and could never be certain of finding it. Huey had seen a driller strike good water, then move 50 feet to one side or the other for a second well and come up dry. Camped near the spring was a family with an automobile. They had erected a couple of canvas tents and spread their bedrolls inside. The woman of the family and a daughter of 10 or so were cooking supper over a campfire.
I'd think anybody rich enough to afford a car could pay for a hotel room in town.
Huey thought the automobile an ugly intrusion upon an otherwise pleasant pastoral scene. A wagon and horses or mules would have been more appropriate.
The running of the thing would keep most people broke. You watch, them stink wagons will have the whole country chugging down to the poorhouse. The only folks left outside will be them of us that never had one.
Tommy extended a strip of bacon over the coals on a long, sharp stick.
You sure you just came out here to get those broncs from Mr. Jenkins? Were you hoping that once I got home I'd decide to stay there?
Some boys were too smart for their own good.
I made Mr. Jenkins a promise. Anyway, I thought it'd be nice for you to visit home for a few days. And your folks would be put out with me if I let you ramble around over this country by yourself. You could get snake bit or set upon by horse thieves. Worst of all, you could get taken in by some good-looking wheelie-go girl and left without a cent to your name.
Them things ever happen to you?
I never got snake bit or robbed by horse thieves.
Oh, I don't have enough money for a girl to pay any attention to me. Mr. Jenkins probably didn't even notice the little bit of pay I drew.
He noticed. He can tell you to the penny just how much he's got in the bank. And he'd as soon lose blood as to spend his money. That's how all them old ranchers got rich. Mr. Jenkins, C.C. Tarpley. They never would spend anything till it was a case of life and death.
Daddy always said he respected men who knew how to hold their money together.
Yeah, I respect him too. I just don't want to be like him. Money's made to buy things with.
I'd like to save enough money to get a ranch someday like the one Mr. Jenkins just bought.
You've already got a place. You and your daddy and mama.
But it was them that put it together. And you. I know you sent them money, Uncle Huey. I want to do the same thing they did, but I want to do it myself. When I have my own place, I want to know it was my doing, not somebody else's.
Well, that'll be hard, working for cowboy wages.
Not if I save them. Not if I know where I'm going and what I want to do when I get there.
His face was solemn.
Me and Skip, we talked a lot. We had the same kind of idea. We even talked about going partners so we could get there quicker. He didn't get his chance, but I'm going to have mine.
I bet you will. If there's anything I can do to help you along the way...
You can teach me everything you know.
Well, there are some things your mama wouldn't approve of.
Even those. I need to know it all.
Maybe they should have gone to Pecos City, Huey thought. But Tommy had plenty of time to learn about the dark side. It would be better if first he knew the sunshine.
I just wish somebody else would do the teaching.
Huey was tempted to drop in on Upton City before they went to the homestead. The thought of a drink at Dutch Schneider's bar brought his tongue to his lips in imagined pleasure. But Eve's eyes would freeze him all the way to his toes if she knew he'd exposed her younger son to that sort of atmosphere. Schneider was a kind and gentle man, but socially tainted by the fact that his occupation was dispensing whiskey. It always struck Huey odd that women folks could attach more blame to those who sold it than to those who drank it. Possibly it was because their husbands, fathers, and brothers were among the latter. A long, flat-topped hill in the distance served as the first landmark to show that they were approaching the Calloway homestead. They came to the field where a soft southwest wind rustled sorghum feed nearly waist high.
Looks like your daddy got the planting done without you.
Probably hired Lester to help him.
If he did, it was your daddy done most of the work.
Lester, the Nestor boy, was locally known for putting on a show of exertion while expending a minimum of effort. He was habitually the last to reach for a pick or shovel, usually after someone else took it up. He'd manage a rueful look at the missed opportunity, but he also managed not to break a sweat unless it was in a race to dinner. Across the field, moving toward them, a man rode a cultivator drawn by a pair of mules.
It looks like your daddy's coming now.
Tommy tensed. Huey suspected his nephew had been dreading the first confrontation with his parents. He left home without a by your leave. Walter halted the team at the end of the row and stepped down from the cultivator, wiping sweat from his face onto his sleeve as he walked toward the two horsemen. Every time Huey saw his younger brother, he was struck anew by the realization that the world had lost a good cowboy when Walter decided to become a stock farmer, molding his hands to fit a plow handle instead of bridle reins. He retained none of his cowboy appearance anymore. With his shapeless old hat, his patched and faded overalls, and his dirt-encrusted brogans, he looked like what he was, a sunburned, wind-punished, overworked man of the soil, carrying on his gaunt shoulders the kind of heavy responsibility Huey shunned. He was a man of property, certainly, but in Huey's view, property could be more a burden than a blessing.
I brought your wandering boy.
Huey tried in vain to read his brother's eyes as Walter stared at his son. Tommy dismounted from the dun horse and took a step toward his father, then stopped, not sure of himself. Huey held his breath, wondering if the two would speak. It might even have been a mistake to bring Tommy home. Walter took two long strides and threw his arms around Tommy, pounding him on the back.
It's mighty good to see you, son.
Huey let himself break into a grin. Walter stepped back to observe his son at arm's length.
Can't see that you've growed any.
I ain't been gone all that long.
It seemed like a long time to us.
How's Mama?
All right. She'll be a lot better when she sees you.
Walter looked at Huey, who was just now at ease enough to dismount from Biscuit.
When she sees both of you.
I doubt she'll be all that tickled to see me.
Though she might or might not say so, she probably held Huey responsible for Tommy's leaving in the first place. Eve regarded Huey's wanderlust as contagious. Her older son, Cotton, left home to pursue a dream of finding a place in the new technological world of the automobile. He worked now in a San Angelo garage, repairing cars. Tommy could take automobiles or leave them alone, but he had some of Huey's restless spirit, an itch to see for himself what lay on the other side of the hill. Walter looked at the sun, still a couple hours short of setting.
You all go on to the house. I need to use up the daylight.
I'll take over for you. You can ride Dunny and go in with Uncle Huey.
Huey knew Tommy was nervous about the reception awaiting him from his mother, though his father's welcome had been warm. Huey was uncertain, too.
No, son. When you got a dose of medicine to take, best thing is to swallow it the quickest you can. Besides, if she lights on anybody, it's liable to be your Uncle Huey.
Ooh.
Tell her I'm liable to be late, so you all go on and eat supper without me.
Huey suspected his brother was glad for the excuse not to go in right now. If a storm waited, he would be better off riding the cultivator out of earshot. Huey dreaded facing Eve without Walter being on hand to give him at least a modicum of moral support. But chances were that if Walter saw she was in an ill humor, he'd retreat to the barn anyway and leave Huey and Tommy to face judgment alone. Years of marriage taught him the signs. Looking toward the house and its three big chinaberry trees grown up from saplings he helped plant many years ago, Huey touched his spurs gently to Biscuit's sides. His thoughts ran to San Juan Hill. He missed that battle. He wished he could miss this one.
Looks like everything's been painted since I was here.
Last fall, our yearlings brought more than we expected, so Daddy decided we ought to paint the house and barns before they fell down around us.
The plain box and strip house was white, the barn red. They had not painted the windmill tower and cypress fan, though. Surely that would not have required much extra paint. To Huey, a well-painted windmill added a smart touch to a place, made it look up and coming like those on C.C. Tarpley's ranch. Maybe if they had a little paint left over, he'd do it himself. Though ordinarily, he tried to avoid work he couldn't do on horseback. Aside from the paint job, he couldn't see that much had changed. The chicken pen looked a bit bigger, and Walter added a couple of corrals. It was still a nester outfit at bottom, and a stranger to real prosperity, but at least it looked like Walter and Eve were finally on their way up. Tommy's and Cotton's black dog was old now, but his bark hadn't diminished. He trotted out from underneath the house and challenged the horses. He'd always barked at Huey, no matter how many times Huey fed or petted him. The dog often tangled with coyotes that came snooping around a chicken pen at night. Huey long hoped he would run up against one with sharper teeth than his own. It would serve the dumb mutt right. But the worst that ever happened to him was an occasional unfortunate spraying by a skunk. When Tommy stepped down, the dog sniffed at him, recognized the scent, and went into a wild display of joy. But when Huey moved close, the animal barked at him.
If I was you, I'd swap that dog for a one-eyed tomcat. You'd have the best of the trade.
They unsaddled the horses and turned them loose in a corral beside the barn. Tommy fetched oats in a bucket and poured them into a trough. Biscuit tried to edge Dunny out of the way so he could have the oats to himself, but Dunny circled the trough and took his share from the opposite side. Biscuit nipped at him, then gave up and tried simply to eat faster. Sharing was a human concept, not contagious to horses. Huey put his saddle on a rack beneath a shed where no horse or mule could gnaw on it. He watched Tommy carefully rack his own saddle and hang his bridle on a hook placed on the wall for that purpose. Tommy knelt down to pet the dog.
Well, Tommy, we've stalled about as long as we can.
Tommy looked toward the house with a mixture of hope and dread.
Reckon so. Just as well go in and see what medicine tastes like.
Tommy started forth, the dog trotting happily beside him. Huey brought up the rear. Huey saw a vague movement through the screen door and knew Eve had seen them coming. He'd rather they would have surprised her, for then she wouldn't have had time to prepare a sermon. Huey carefully scraped his feet in case he had stepped in something unnoticed at the barn and opened the screen door for Tommy. Ordinarily, he would have waited for his nephew to do the honors, but this was no time for such deference.
Go ahead, I'm behind you.
Make sure you're not too far behind me.
Eve stood in the kitchen to one side of the big, majestic iron stove. Her hands were on her hips, not a good sign in Huey's opinion. The glare of sunlight through a window behind her obscured her face, so he couldn't see her expression or what was in her eyes.
I'm home, Mama.
Eve stared at her son for a moment that seemed an hour, then enveloped him in her arms.
I'm glad, son, real glad.
Huey's shoulders slumped in relief. Right now, if he were at Schneider's bar, he could down a double shot of whiskey in one swallow. Eve held her son at arm's length.
You look like you've grown a foot.
Daddy didn't think I changed at all.
Your daddy probably had the sun in his eyes.
Her own eyes blinked a lot.
At least you found your way home.
Uncle Huey knew the best way.
I'm sure he was a world of help.
Huey wasn't certain whether she meant it or was being sarcastic. With Eve, it was often hard to tell.
You must be starved half to death, son. I'll start some supper.
I'm fine, Mama. Me and Uncle Huey, we've been eating mighty good.
That was a shameful stretch of the truth. They had eaten little on the trail that couldn't be boiled in a can or broiled at the end of a stick, but Huey didn't contradict him. This was no time to compromise a reception that had turned out much better than he expected. Eve turned finally to Huey.
Thanks for bringing him home.
She smiled at him, which he thought must have taken some doing.
Well, I was coming this way anyhow.
Bet you thought I was going to raise Billy Hell with both of you.
Why, no. We knew everything was going to be just fine.
At the supper table, Walter turned to his brother.
You planning to stay, Huey?
Huey dropped a third spoon of sugar into his coffee and stirred it.
Well, maybe a week or so. We got a job to do for Mr. Jenkins.
He explained that he was to pick up 20 Bronx Fat Gervin sold to the J Bar, but the Jenkins was in no big hurry about getting them. Walter stopped a forkful of beans halfway to his mouth.
Never knew Fat to trade in horses. But since CC's health began failing, Fat's taken over just about everything CC owns. Reckon he's looking to make money everywhere he can.
He would no good horse if it bit him on the...
Huey glanced at Eve.
On the neck.
It was generally agreed around Upton City that if Fat Gervin had not married C.C. Tarpley's daughter, and thus acquired an inside track toward someday inheriting the old man's money, he would probably be eking out a living swamping for saloons, or doing something that offered similarly poor prospects. He slouched his way to failure at everything else he'd tried, including a foredoomed effort at being a cowboy.
I'll ride over to Upton City tomorrow and ask Fat when he wants to deliver the Bronx.
Walter'd better go with you. Every time you and Fat get close to one another, something unpleasant comes of it.
Well, I don't see what could go wrong. This is strictly a business deal between Fat and Mr. Jenkins. All I'm doing is carrying the mail. Anyway, Walter's got his plowing to do.
I just don't want to see you get into a fight with Fat.
You ain't having trouble with the note on this place, are you?
No, we're all right now. But you never know when you may need to be on good terms with a banker.
The only reason Fat's a banker is that C.C. Tarpley says so. But I'll watch myself. I'll bend over backwards to be nice to the son of a bitch. Begging your pardon.
Eve pretended she'd not heard. A respectable woman was not supposed to be familiar with such an expression, and to acknowledge it would be tacit admission that she was. Huey had heard her use it herself on occasions of stress.
I may circle by Alvin Laudermilk's place afterwards. That might be where the Bronx are at.
Eve looked him square in the eye.
It's still where Spring Renfro is at, too.
You don't reckon she holds it against me, leaving the way I did? She told me herself that I ought to go.
What else could she say? She knew you'd leave anyhow. She just tried to ease your conscience, if you had one.
Well, it was about the hardest thing I ever done. But it was the best for both of us. I wasn't cut out to marry like Walter and turn myself into a farmer. And I couldn't drag her around from one cow-punching job to another.
She would have been happy for you to keep on being a cow-puncher so long as you lit in one place and stayed put.
Well, the milk's a long time spilt, so there's no use talking about it.
No, there isn't. She's found somebody else.
Huey looked up sharply.
Who?
Nice young fella. Widower. Went to work as a foreman on Alvin's ranch after Alvin began getting stove up.
I didn't know Alvin was ailing.
Not ailing, exactly. Just can't do all the work he used to. Comes to everybody eventually. Even fiddle-footed cowboys.
He knew that was aimed at him.
I'm doing just fine.
Sure you are. Those lines in your face are just sun grins. And I saw you catch at your side while you were walking toward the house.
Huey didn't realize he'd done it. The last bronc he broke touched off an internal ache that kept coming back, slipping up on him when he didn't expect it. But what if he did have a few miscellaneous aches and pains? He earned every one of them fair and square. Eve had a way of making him feel guilty even when he was as innocent as a newborn calf. It almost ruined his appetite, for he refilled his plate only once and didn't eat but 6 biscuits and 2 helpings of dried apple cobbler. Huey couldn't see a nickel's worth of change in Upton City. It still fell far short of being a city, despite the name. He noticed a couple of new houses, but that didn't represent any wild spurt of growth, considering how long he'd been gone. The only 2-story building was the square stone courthouse, topped by a domed cupola. Tallest thing in town, taller even than the windmills that stood beside or behind almost every house. Locals like to tell gullible city folks passing through that there were so many windmills, they sucked up all the wind on slow days and left the air dead still on the downwind side of town. Huey looked toward the plain, all-business stone structure of the Tarpley Bank and Trust. He thought about going there first, but instead he angled biscuit across to Schneider's saloon. A good stiff drink might make the sight of Fat Gervin a little less disagreeable. Once they got past discussion of the weather and wishing it would rain, he couldn't remember that he and Fat had ever agreed on anything of consequence. The only thing fatter than Gervin's broad butt was his head. Huey knew of no one who really liked Fat unless it would be his wife. Sometimes he wondered about her. The truck stood parked just past the saloon. Beside it stood a familiar figure with a wrench in his hand, staring in frustration at the engine. Steam boiled into the clear air and disappeared.
Howdy, Blue Hannigan! If it was a horse or mule, you'd just shoot it!
The freighter looked around, recognition spreading a broad grin across his grease-smeared face. He and Huey worked as cowboys together years ago before Hannigan decided to marry and take on the burdens of a respectable family man. He made a show of throwing the wrench at Huey, but held on to it.
Just when I thought the day had turned about as bad as it could get, look who showed up.
Biscuit eyed Hannigan warily, still taking the wrench as a personal threat. Hannigan reached out with the other hand, covered with black grease. Huey did not hesitate to grasp it, grease and all. He shook vigorously, for old cowboy friends were still the best of all.
It's God's punishment for you taking up with the machine age. I never saw a mule steam like that.
I wish I'd never laid eyes on any machine more complicated than a wheelbarrow. The times change. That truck can travel a whole lot faster than mules in a wagon.
Well, not when it's broke down. Maybe a drink could make things look better to you.
Couldn't make them look no worse. You buying, or have I got to?
I'll set them up. That truck probably keeps you broke, and us cowboys get paid real good.
Well, that ain't how I remember it.
The freighter jerked his head toward the saloon. He drew back the wrench. Huey thought for a moment he was going to throw it at the engine, but Hannigan pitched it into the bed of the truck. He was not destructive of property, especially his own. When Huey's eyes accustomed themselves to the dim interior of the saloon, he saw Dutch Schneider walking toward the bar from the back, where a skinny old man sat hunched over a small table, a bottle and glass in front of him. Huey plunked 50 cents on the bar.
Dutch, you got anything fit for two hard-working men to drink? Well, one anyway. I ain't sure about Blue.
Huey Calloway, so long I've not seen you, it wondered me if they had buried you and I had missed the funeral.
Schneider walked behind the bar and poured two shot glasses full.
For two good friends, the best in the house.
The genuineness of his welcome warmed Huey even before he tasted the whiskey. He couldn't understand why some people in Upton City were always down on Schneider, who drifted into town years ago from somewhere down in the hill country, German settlements. He was a quiet, dignified man, much more tolerant than those who criticized him. He attended the local Baptist church on Sundays, though some of the local women whispered that they believed he was a Lutheran, or possibly even worse, a Catholic. But he ran a clean place and sold clean whiskey. That was recommendation enough for Huey. Huey enjoyed the gentle burn as the drink went down and the glow that followed it. He turned, facing toward the rear of the room.
Tell me, that ain't C.C. Tarpley back yonder?
Tarpley had always been slight of build and looked as if he might have to carry rocks in his pockets to keep the wind from blowing him away. Even so, he appeared to have shrunk.
It is indeed Mr. Tarpley. Often he comes here and sits. He does not drink much. He just sits. I think he waits to die.
Old C.C. never was sick a day in his life.
Well, he's sick now. I ain't sure if it's his heart or his head. Either way, it's slowly killing him.
Hannigan leaned in as if to share a dark secret.
You remember the time old man Adcock and C.C. had a hell of a fight in front of the bank? Well, sir, the old man had a note coming due on that little shop of his a couple of weeks ago and asked for an extension. C.C. said he'd do better than that. He tore up the note. Said he put more value in Adcock's friendship than on the money. No, sir, he sure ain't the C.C. we used to know.
C.C. Tarpley had his faults, but holding grudges was not one of them. He also had his virtues, but generosity was not one of those. At least it hadn't been.
What did Fat think since he's supposed to be running the bank?
You could hear him holler halfway across town. I best be getting back to business. I've got a haul to make if I can bluff that truck into running.
Put the spurs to it.
Fat holds the note. I've got half a mind to turn the truck over to him, but he'd probably bust a blood vessel. I hate to have his dying on my conscience. Good to see you, Huey.
After Hannigan left, Huey studied the racehorse pictures that covered the wall behind the bar. Most bars of this kind were more likely to feature pictures of women in scanty dress or no dress at all. Schneider loved horses like many old bachelors loved women, from afar. Huey had never seen him on horseback. He considered another drink, but decided against it. Though the bronc deal was made, and he had no reason to match wits with Fat Girvin, he thought it wise to have all his wits about him. Unlike his father-in-law, Fat never turned loose of a grudge, and Huey in the past had given him grounds enough to stay mad until he was 106. Huey moved back to the table where the old man sat staring off into nothing, his mind far away.
C.C.?
Tarpley looked up in surprise.
Huey, didn't know you was anywhere in the country.
He shoved an arthritic hand forward and motioned for Huey to take a chair. The voice was thinner than Huey remembered it. He had always thought C.C. looked old, but now He appeared absolutely aged.
Just got into town.
I'll buy you a drink.
Oh, already had one, thanks. I'm fixing to go see Fat, Frank.
When the old man was on decent terms with his son-in-law, he called him Frank. When he was on the outs, he referred to him as Fat like everybody else.
What you need to see Frank about? Your brother's got himself in good shape over at the bank.
Huey explained that he was representing Morgan Jenkins, who bought a string of broncs from Gervin.
Now, where would Frank get broncs to sell? We don't raise any except what we need for our own using at the ranch.
I reckon he's took up horse trading.
Dangerous business, horse trading. Can get you in more trouble than a case of bad whiskey. You looking for a cow punching job?
Already got one. Out in the mountains.
Never did like the mountains. Give me the flats every time. If you fall, it ain't far down.
Huey was hesitant to ask Tarpley what was troubling him. In the first place, it was none of Huey's business, and the CC he used to know would tell him so in no uncertain terms. In the second place, it probably couldn't help anyway. CC Tarpley had always been too proud to appreciate sympathy. Tougher than Wang Leather, he had come to the dry Pecos River country while the departing Comanche's tracks were still fresh, cut out a goodly chunk of range for himself, and held it against cattle thieves, drought, lawyers, bankers, and other hazards of the ranching trade. The one thing he had not been able to beat was the long succession of calendars that changed over his desk year after year. CC's eyes bored into Huey until Huey felt uncomfortable. He had punched cattle for Tarpley in the past, and might again if circumstances demanded it, but he'd rather not. Like Jenkins, Tarpley was close with a dollar. His idea of liberality was to bring a couple of watermelons to camp a time or two during the summer. That was why his canceling of old man Adcock's debt seemed so unlikely.
I worry about you, Huey.
About me?
Life's short. I'm finding that out for myself. I'm afraid you'll come to the end of years and not leave anything to show for it.
I've had a lot of experiences and made a lot of friends.
But what do you be leaving behind?
A lot of experiences and a lot of friends.
Yeah, that don't count for much on the ledgers down at the bank.
I don't read ledgers now, and I sure won't be interested in them after they salt me away.
Don't make light of it. Death ain't no small thing.
Huey saw an opening to ask the question.
How come all this worry about dying? I don't imagine the angels are in a hurry to receive me or you, either one.
It's coming, whether we're ready or not. And I ain't sure it's the angels that's waiting for us. I got a pain in my guts eating away at me, telling me to get myself ready.
You been to a doctor?
These pill merchants around here, ain't nothing they can do when it's your time except sell you patent medicine and drain your purse.
Huey had had his differences with Tarpley over the years, but he had always liked the old man. Though Tarpley's principal motivation had been personal enrichment, he had helped to build a country in his own perverse way. Huey had no quarrel with people who wanted to better their own condition. In the process, they often bettered the condition of those around them.
Maybe if you go to a doctor somewhere like Kansas City or Chicago, they could help you. Even Fort Worth. Always had a good time in Fort Worth.
I don't mind so much for myself. It's my daughter I worry most about. Her married to Frank Gervin. You know and I know, Huey. He ain't no hand.
Huey had no argument there. When it came to cattle and horses, Fat Gervin was about as useless as a fifth wheel on a wagon.
Well, I'm afraid I can't be no help to you. Anybody who could make a hand of Fat would probably walk on water.
Left on his own, he'll likely run through the bank and the ranch both before the grass takes hold over my grave.
Tarpley started to pour whiskey into his glass, but set the bottle back down, his attention drifting away. Huey stood up.
I'm sorry to find you feeling poorly, Cece. I do wish you'd go someplace and hunt up a good doctor.
Tarpley didn't respond. Huey was not sure the old man had even heard him. He walked back to the bar where Schneider was reading a newspaper. He subscribed to several. Dutch Schneider and Alvin Laudermilk were the best-read men in the county. They could name just about every king, president, and major knave on the international scene.
I always thought he was too ornery to die.
Schneider looked toward Tarpley.
He still is. I think when the time comes, he will not go.
Huey stopped just outside the saloon door and looked down the dirt street.
She needs my old aunt's club foot. If it wouldn't cause me to junk you, I'd do it yesterday. God dang it, rabbit.
Blue Hannigan still tinkered with the truck's engine, using the same bristling language he often employed against recalcitrant mules. Sometimes the mules responded, and sometimes they didn't. The truck remained indifferent. Huey turned toward the bank, resolving to state his business to Fat Gervin and get out as quickly as he could. He tried to regard it as a challenge, like riding a new bronc, for he always found a certain exhilaration in that sort of contest. But he saw nothing exhilarating about C.C. Tarpley's son-in-law. When he walked into the bank, Huey was not surprised to see Gervin in. The high ceilings and tall open windows kept the stone building fairly cool, and Gervin much preferred to spend his time indoors rather than be out on the ranch, where the sun bore down hot and plentiful sweat labor waited. Fat's desk lay cluttered with paper, indicating work deferred. Fat long believed in putting off till tomorrow that which did not absolutely have to be done today. The desk stood behind a low wooden fence meant to keep the clientele from getting too close to the money. Taking Huey to be a potential customer, Gervin stood up, turning on his best come spend it with us smile. Recognition killed the welcome. Gervin sat down heavily, his chubby cheeks sagging, his face taking on a sour look.
Are you back already?
Already? I've been gone 4 years.
No, it don't seem near long enough. I know you didn't come to put money in the bank. You never had $20 at one time in your life.
Gervin never had forgiven Huey for helping Walter and Eve save their stock farm from foreclosure, or for other miscellaneous indignities suffered over the years at Huey's hands.
I'm here on business for Mr. Morgan Jenkins.
Huey fished a letter from his shirt pocket and extended it across the desk into Fat's thick hands. Fat frowned as he read.
Says here you're to receive the horses I sold him and take them back to Alpine. How come he trusts you with this much responsibility?
I'm the best hand he's got.
Must be mighty hard times around Alpine. What'd he tell you about the horses?
Said they're of Alvin Laudermilch's raising.
No, I told him they came from Alvin's place. When do you want to get them?
He's not in a hurry. Told me to have a nice visit with the folks before I go back. I'll let you know when I'm ready.
Yeah, you do that now. I got business to attend to.
Fat started shuffling papers. He hadn't looked all that busy when Huey came in, but Huey had no interest in staying any longer.
Then I'll mosey along. Adios, Fat.
I almost shook off that nickname once. I ain't forgot that you're the one who hung it on me again.
It happened so long ago, Huey had almost forgotten. He and Walter were working on C.C. Tarpley's ranch. Frank Gervin drew pay too, but he could hardly be accused of working. The minute Tarpley was out of sight, Gervin would head for the shade, look for something to eat, or sweet-talk Tarpley's daughter. Huey never had figured out what she saw in him. These days, she probably wondered, too. Fat was widely reputed to have a roving eye, though his romantic notions usually came to naught. Whatever seductive charms he might once have had, he used up in winning Tarpley's daughter and carving his initials on the Tarpley inheritance. Huey used the boyhood nickname in an attempt to shame Gervin out of the kitchen and away from the shade, but it only won him Gervin's enmity. He felt no particular regrets about that. A man was known by his enemies as well as by the friends he kept. Around here, it was a mark of honor to be disliked by Fat Gervin. Huey stepped out into the sunshine, his brief ordeal over. He looked across the street toward a store whose modest sign, almost hidden beneath gingerbread trim, read, Phelps General Mercantile and Sundries. Though he didn't need anything, he would buy some smoking tobacco. The genial Pearson Phelps always treated him like company, whether he had spending money or not, but Huey liked to give him a little business when he could. He had spent 4 bits with Dutch Schneider. Pearson Phelps deserved no less. The gray-haired Phelps came out of the front door carrying a box of groceries. A tall cowboy of 40 or so followed with another box, placing it in the end of the wagon standing in front of the store. Phelps brightened as Huey strode casually toward him.
Look who's here. We see more of Halley's Comet than we see of you, Huey Calloway.
The cowboy seemed to know the name, for he turned abruptly to look. Huey didn't recognize him, however.
You still peddling grub? I thought you'd be rich by now and mayor of some big city like Midland or San Angelo, living in the lap of luxury.
I decided my first million wasn't enough. I'll stay till I make my second.
Phelps turned to the tall cowboy.
Huey, meet Farley Neal. He's Alvin Laudermilk's foreman.
Neal gave Huey a firm and friendly handshake.
I've heard about you.
Not from Fat Gervin, I hope.
Yes, but mostly from your friends. You got a lot of them, seems like.
Huey tried to remember what he'd heard about Alvin's new foreman.
Somebody told me Alvin stove up.
Well, just enough that he needed somebody to take part of the load off him. He's wrestled too many rough broncs and too many iron jaw mules. They've caught up with him.
It wasn't just the horses and mules that caught up with Alvin, Huey knew. It was whiskey.
I need to go buy an auger with him. Me and Alvin have had some good times together.
Yeah, he'll be tickled. He talks about you.
Well, come on into the store, Huey. It's warm out here in the sun.
Huey stepped up onto the wooden sidewalk and halted in mid-stride. A thin woman in her 30s ventured into the doorway and stopped abruptly, looking at him in surprise. Huey's jaw dropped. Words ran through his head but wouldn't come off his tongue. Spring Renfro seemed equally flustered. A tiny smile so quickly come and so quickly gone, he was not sure he'd really seen it.
Hello, Huey.
Spring. Miss Renfro.
She usually gave people the impression of tallness, though the top of her head would barely reach Huey's chin. Her thin frame exaggerated her height. Huey didn't know whether to step closer or turn and go. But there was no question of going. His boots seemed nailed to the sidewalk. He could only stare, warmth rushing to his face. He knew he looked like an idiot. For certain, he felt like one. Her composure regained, she made two short steps toward him and held out her hand. Hesitantly, he took it and gave her a weak handshake.
You look well, Huey.
She looked better than well. To him, she looked wonderful. He wanted to tell her so, but couldn't quite manage it.
Mighty pleased to see you. Dang it, Huey Biscuit could make better conversation.
He would have been prepared had he seen her at Alvin Laudermilk's ranch, where she taught school for children of the Laudermilk neighbors. He would have expected her there, but here she'd taken him unawares and put him into shock. Often on quiet nights, he thought of her when he sat beside a fire alone, or when he rode in the mountains and let his mind dwell upon horseback rides they took together during the time he was contemplating marriage. Eventually, he reached a point where the pleasure of old memories outweighed the sense of loss they brought. He thought he had come to an accommodation years ago with his decision to choose freedom to roam rather than the confining responsibilities of married life. Now the years fell away in an instant, and his convictions about the lightness of old decisions lay in shambles at his feet. He stood as if hypnotized. She seemed to wait for him to say something. When he did not, she motioned to Farley.
Did you meet Farley Neal?
Huey nodded, his tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth. It came to him then, something Eve told him. She said Spring had found someone. A widower who had become foreman at the Laudermilks. He forcibly put down a fleeting resentment. He had given up any claim on Spring Renfro the day he bid her goodbye and rode away, seeking adventure with Snort Yarnell. She had every right to happiness wherever she might find it. He could put away the resentment, but not the unexpected pain of seeing her with someone else.
Mr. Phelps, I believe we still have one box of supplies on the counter.
I'll fetch it.
The task gave him an excuse to move away from her, to collect his wits. Perhaps by the time he came back outside, he'd be able to wipe that deaf and dumb look from his face and say something that wouldn't sound simple-minded. He paused, both hands on the box, and squeezed his eyes shut in an effort to stop their burning. He walked back out into the sunlight, trying not to look into Spring's blue eyes, but unable to help himself. He watched Neal help her up onto the wagon seat and told himself Neal was a lucky man. Spring looked down at Huey as he put the groceries in the wagon bed.
Are you home to stay?
No, just got a little business. As soon as it's done, I'll be leaving.
Alvin will be disappointed if you don't visit with him before you go.
Glad to have met you, Huey.
Farley set the team into motion. Huey couldn't take his eyes from the wagon until it disappeared beyond the courthouse. Spring didn't look back in his direction.
Mighty fine woman, Miss Renfro.
As fine as ever was.
Farley Neal's a good man. They make a handsome couple.
Where'd he come from?
He was foreman a while on C.C. Tarpley's ranch. But Fat Gervin kept telling him what to do. He either had to quit or whip Fat, so he left.
Well, anybody who can't get along with Fat is all right with me. They fixing to marry?
I've heard nothing definite, but everybody here expects that they will. You thinking about putting in a claim on her again?
Huey shoved his hands into his pockets.
If I ever had a claim, I gave it up a long time ago. You say Neil's a good man?
Reminds me a lot of your brother Walter. Solid, serious, hardworking.
Yeah, everything I never was. Well, I reckon I'm glad for Spring.
Aren't you coming in?
Nah, I've got to go back and talk to Fat. I think it's time for me to get those broncs and go.
Eve did not take the news with good grace.
Leaving?
She put away her sewing and faced Huey with her hands on her hips.
What do you mean you're leaving the day after tomorrow? You said you and Tommy were staying a couple of weeks.
Fat's anxious to get rid of them broncs.
It always amazed him the way a woman could sense the truth, no matter how good a liar a man thought he was.
You saw Spring Renfro. Now you're afraid if you stay around, you won't be able to leave her again.
I didn't say Tommy was going with me. I figured once he got home, he might decide to stay here.
He hoped so, anyway.
You can't drive those ponies to Alpine by yourself. Besides, you promised to teach me all I need to know.
I never promised no such a thing. You said that, not me.
You didn't say you wouldn't.
But when Skip got killed, you wanted real bad to get away from that place.
You made me stay and face it, so I already put the worst of it behind me. I can take it now.
You don't have to trail after your Uncle Huey to God knows where. If it's a job you want, you can get one here with Alvin Laudermilk or even C.C. Tarpley. At least you'd be close to home.
But that's what's the matter. I'd be too close. I need to learn to make it on my own without you and Daddy always standing there to catch me if I fall.
Won't Uncle Huey be doing the same thing?
He lets me fall. Says I learn more that way, and it's good for my character.
Well, if it's falling you want, you can do it here at home. Out yonder, them rocks are sharp and hard.
Tommy didn't budge. Walter watched and listened, saying nothing. Huey suspected he sided with his son, for he'd not always been the homebound farmer he was now. Walter could understand what drove a boy like Tommy, eager to know the world, though he would await the proper moment before saying so. Huey could leave, but Walter had to keep on living with Eve. She turned to Huey, her eyes stinging.
I wish I knew what would cure that restless streak in you, because it's contagious. You gave it to my oldest son, and now Tommy's caught it.
That was not exactly the straight of it. Cotton was always intrigued by things mechanical, so the farm couldn't hold him when he came to his time. He would have left with or without Huey's influence. Tommy was different. He was more comfortable with a life tied to the soil and the seasons, to the grass and the animals, but he wanted a bigger bite of it than the home place could give him. He might indeed have caught some of that from his uncle, who inherited itchy feet from his own improvident father.
Tommy, why don't you wait till you get a couple more years on you? Everything will still be out there waiting.
You may not still be out there, the kind of life you lead.
Huey and Tommy left the farm at sunup, cutting across country toward the C.C. Tarpley ranch, where Fat was to have the broncs ready for delivery. Eve's demeanor and farewell felt more than a little frosty, and Huey couldn't blame her. He, too, wished Tommy would stay home. It was a burdensome thing being saddled with responsibility for a youngster so closely kin, yet not his own.
I wish we hadn't been in such a hurry. Daddy's looking tired. I was going to finish that south field for him.
Well, you could stay here a while and go back to the ranch later.
Maybe if Tommy remained a couple of weeks, he'd decide not to leave at all.
I hired out to do a job of work, and I'll stick to it like you've taught me.
They were not long in reaching the outer perimeter of the Tarpley Ranch, for it spread across a major portion of the county and lapped over into the next. C.C. had kept adding to it, buying out homesteaders as they finished proving up their claims on state and school lands and became legally entitled to sell. Most didn't find this part of the country hospitable to the plow because rainfall was too erratic. CC tried several times to buy Walter out. Walter managed to make a crop of sorts most years, but only because he watered the land with his own sweat. Had he not been grazing a herd of cows and a few brood mares on the place for extra income, he probably wouldn't have survived, and the Tarpley range would have expanded by 8 more sections.
Daddy always talked like C.C. Tarpley was a hard man to work for.
He just had his own ways, and once you learned what they were, you could get along with him all right. He never liked for a cowboy to see the sunrise through a window, or the sunset either. He wanted you out working as long as there was daylight to see, but he would generally be there with you. Wasn't like some I've worked for that sent you out and then went back to the house.
Like Fat Gervin?
I can call him fat because I'm as old as he is, and I don't owe him nothing. You'd better call him Mr. Gervin, at least till your folks have their land all paid out.
He came near getting it once, that time Daddy got his leg broke. If you hadn't stayed and taken Daddy's place... Mr. Gervin still holds a grudge against you, I think.
His grudge goes back a long ways farther than that. When C.C. got mad, he'd forget about it in a day or two, but Fat's got a memory like an elephant.
At least he ain't dangerous. He couldn't whip an old man on crutches.
That's what does make him dangerous. He'll figure some way to come at you from behind and hit you when you're not looking. Give me an honest fighting man every time. If you can't whip him, you may be able to outrun him.
The Tarpley headquarters imposed upon the land. Its centerpiece, a large two-story white frame house, stood on a slight knoll surrounded by tall chinaberry trees. Their upper reaches extended higher than the roof. Chinaberries also formed a circle around a nearby surface tank, nurtured by its constant supply of water. Huey recalled that the tank was stocked with catfish, supposedly for CC's own use, though he never seemed to have time to wet a hook. Fat Gervin fished there when he was certain his father-in-law was miles away. CC would be content to live in an adobe bunkhouse, or even a dugout, but the late Mrs. Tarpley insisted upon having a house in town and one on the ranch, with accommodations appropriate to their station in life. C.C. had an eye toward accumulation of land, cattle, and capital. His wife had an eye toward architecture and landscaping. The ranch house became hers to furnish and maintain as she wished, but the rest of the place was C.C.'s personal domain. The broad layout of corrals, barns, and sheds had been built to his utilitarian specifications. All in all, it was a pretty place, but Huey couldn't remember that he'd seen it often in the full light of day. He'd usually left before the sun was up and didn't return until night was settling in. C.C. got his money's worth, whether he was buying land or labor. Huey saw horses in a central corral and rained biscuit in that direction. The cowboy rose from a seat on the step that led up into the largest barn. He hailed them and slouched out partway to meet the incoming riders. Something about the way he moved reminded Huey of Fat, though this man would have to put on 50 or 75 pounds to match Gervin's weight.
Howdy.
The cowboy had a loosely rolled cigarette dangling from his lower lip and talked around it rather than take it out of his mouth. His shirt tail was hanging out.
I suppose you'd be Huey Calloway?
I was the last time I checked. Where's Fat?
The cowboy nodded toward the large white house.
Mr. and Mrs. Gervin are up yonder. He said for me to turn them ponies yonder over to Huey Calloway. You got anything to show that you're really him?
Huey felt a little annoyed that the cowboy doubted him. Everybody this side of San Angelo knew who he was, or ought to. This puncher must have come from someplace farther east, automatically a mark against him.
Call Fat, he'll know me.
The cowboy's frown said he'd rather not.
If you say you're Huey Calloway, I reckon I'll have to take your word for it.
He pointed his thumb toward the barn.
The Bronx are yonder way. I suppose you're in a hurry to get them started?
Huey looked up. The sun was moving toward noon, and he knew Tommy would be hungry. Boys always were. At most ranches, they'd be invited to stay for dinner. Even a Yankee-owned outfit would offer that much hospitality, and C.C. Tarpley was no Yankee. Huey waited for the cowboy to say something, then did it himself.
We'll line them out right after dinner.
The cowboy remembered his manners, sort of.
Yeah, I reckon you would like to eat first. We'll see if the cook can rustle up a little something.
He didn't look like somebody C.C. would keep on the payroll for long. He was probably a Fat Gervin protege, Huey thought. Old CC must be sick to turn loose of things this way. Huey remembered the cook, a dour little fella who seemed as devoted to thrift as CC himself when it came to buying groceries for the bunkhouse kitchen. He went to work for the ranch after Walter and Eve left to take up their homestead. Before, Eve operated the bunkhouse kitchen. It was often expected of a ranch foreman's wife that she cook for the hands without extra pay beyond her husband's salary. That was one reason she held to their home place with such a determined grip. For there, she never had to cook for anyone but her own again, if she didn't want to. The food was about as Huey remembered it, and it reminded him of one major reason he left CC's employ. Without canned tomatoes, the cook would have been at a total loss. They seemed to be in everything except the biscuits. For dessert, he offered another biscuit and watery blackstrap molasses of a cheap brand so poor that Pearson Phelps refused to handle it in his store. CC got it from Midland. No wonder the cook looked as if he wouldn't weigh 100 pounds soaking wet.
Mighty fine dinner.
Huey turned to Tommy and the cowboy.
Let's be seen about them Bronx.
As the three men approached the corral, Huey realized that something was awfully wrong. He climbed up on the plank fence, looking down among the horses in disbelief. He had never seen a sorry-looking bunch of scrubs in his life.
These ain't what Mr. Jenkins bought. They're supposed to be from Alvin Laudermilk's, and Alvin wouldn't give a day's grass to such as this.
The cowboy shrugged, all innocence and puzzlement.
I wouldn't know nothing about that. All I know is that Mr. Gervin said that these are the ones you're supposed to take.
Like hell they are. They wouldn't make good soap.
They were a mixed lot of long-tailed mustangs, a couple of ewe-necked old geldings, Huey would bet were spoiled outlaws, and one black stud that bared its teeth at any animal that dared come near.
What's Fat trying to pull?
I just work here. You'll have to talk to him about that.
I'm fixing to do that very thing.
Angrily, Huey jumped down from the fence. The impact sent pain lancing through his knees, but he paid little attention to that or the sudden hurting in his belly. Biscuit seemed to sense his agitation, for the brown horse lifted its head high, ears and eyes alert. Huey swung onto its back, not waiting for Tommy to catch up. He put Biscuit into a long trot.